change only happens when that dissatisfaction with the current status quo, when that vision for the future is clear, when that first next step is there. And those three things have to be greater than the resistance to change.
Welcome to The Fearless Foodie, the podcast that gets honest about what it really takes to thrive in food and retail. I'm Amy Wilkinson, coach, speaker, and trusted partner to food industry teams with lived experience of the pace, pressure, and politics that come with the job. Fearless foodies cut through the fluff and get straight to what actually helps. And that's exactly what we're here to do. Let's dive in.
Before we get started, a quick heads up. On the 31st of March, I'll be recording a live episode of the Fearless Foodie podcast at IFE at Excel London. I'm going to be joined by Tracy Southwell and Ross Dennison for a practical, honest conversation about what really changes when women in food manufacturing are properly supported to lead and what that unlocks for teams, culture, and performance across the whole business. We'll talk about inclusive leadership, meaningful allyship, and the small everyday behaviours that genuinely move the dial for women and men. IFE runs from the 30th of March to the 1st of April at Excel London. So if you're there, come and join us. Right, let's get into today's episode. Hi, it's Amy, and today we're talking about a sentence I hear all the time in food and retail. Why is it so flipping hard to get everything done around here? You know, the feeling where like everybody's flat out, technically all the people are in the right room, and yet every project you're doing feels like you're wading through treacle. Things take ages to sign off, tensions are bubbling under the surface, and by the time you get the product out the door, you're exhausted. In this episode, I'm joined by my right-hand woman and fellow coach, Donna Ward-Higgs. Donna and I work together on team assignments, so she sees firsthand what's really going on underneath the "we just need a bit more training" brief that we sometimes get. We're going to talk about why the problem is rarely that people are lazy or that they don't care. We're going to talk about what's actually sitting under the surface of teams where everything just feels so hard. And we're going to give you some simple questions you can ask your own team to spot where the real friction is. The conversation's shaped by the patterns we see again and again in the food manufacturing and retail teams that we work with. The things that slow down work, drain people's energy, and quietly make everyday jobs harder than they need to be. And if this episode hits a nerve, I've also put together a free resource to help you start exploring where things might be getting sticky in your own team. You'll find the link in the show notes. Let's dive in. So, me and Donna. So Donna, you will have heard me talking about loads. Donna Ward-Higgs, my right-hand woman, my wing woman, the original sidekick Fearless Foodie, is here today. And we're going to talk about why is it so hard to get stuff done at work? And we thought we'd just have a bit of a conversation about it. So Donna, you've been working with me how long now?
We are in our third year officially. But we've been alongside each other for about 4.5 years now, haven't we?
Yeah, so in the 3 official years and then the unofficial where she was giving me advice for free before that, you've got to know, like, and your background is in retail as well, so you kind of know all this fast moving world as well, but you've kind of got to know the world of food and manufacturing and retail and all of that sort of stuff.
I've learned so much from you and the teams that we've been working with. And as you say, there's a lot of transferable stuff, the pace, the results, the drive for more continually. There's a lot that's transferable. But yeah, it's been great learning all the acronyms, all the NWTs and the CPCs.
Gavin, off a call with me going, what the hell is MFP? I was like, meat, fish and poultry.
It's so obvious when she told me. So obvious.
But yeah, we want to do an episode and we were talking about it last week and we got like really into it. And I guess, where do we start? Like,
it started because we were debriefing from the end of an assignment.
Yeah.
And that really, really got us thinking about how much deeper the work goes from a training program, a learning program, to team coaching. The difference between going in to do that skills delivery, that capability enhancement, versus actually getting to the bottom of why does it have to be so hard to get anything done around here?
Yeah.
And so that was really what sparked us, I think.
Yeah, because I think there is something that we see, isn't there, that across whatever assignment it is, whether it's team coaching, whether it's team training, but usually a team leader of some description will come to us and go, this is what the problem is. And usually it's not that. Or yes, that's the symptom of the problem, but there's something that's deeper and more underlying. And what we've found is team coaching has been so helpful at getting to that underlying thing. Doesn't mean that there isn't a place for training and all of that sort of stuff, but it's the asking the questions to get beyond the surface level of what's going on.
It's that thing of making sure we're getting to the heart of the work that needs doing, right? When we're asked to come in and work with an organisation, be that a supplier, manufacturer, retailer, it is all about making sure that we deliver what's most needed. So really taking time to ask those questions of stakeholders. And sometimes that's really tricky, right? We're asking the questions that feel uncomfortable. But to make sure that what we're delivering for that team, for that leader, for that business is going to drive the difference that they're looking to serve.
Yeah, because ultimately that's the thing that needs, that's the outcome is what they want, and it isn't always what they think they need to get to that outcome. Because I think as another thing that will be relatable to people in the food industry is like when you are doing consumer research. When I used to brief consumer research out, I'd be going, so I think I'd know as much as the outside agency. Well, I think we need to do this and I think we need to do that. And they'd be like, whoa, take a step back. What is it that you actually want to know? Let us work through what the methodology is to get there. Because actually, just because I know that I like focus groups as an example, doesn't mean that that's the right way to get to where we want to. It might be like doing shop alongs with people or something like that. So it's just thinking about what's relatable to people listening. Like, you have to use experts to get to the end result, not necessarily.
And it's a great example, right? Because one of the things that often shows up in the teams that we're working with is people absolutely know their own perspective on something, and they will die on that hilt of their own perspective being fact. Actually, where a lot of the movement happens with teams is in holding up that mirror to show there are alternative perspectives. And actually, without taking time to get those, we're missing vital information. So it's the same, your preference for being in that focus group situation drove how you anticipated that to go. And it's the same when teams come and say, the leader will say, we just need clearer roles, we need better communication, it's time, it's pressure, it's workload. Yes, those things are absolutely real in your front view right now. But let's take a moment to just peel back the layers and see what's going on with the humans that need to deliver that work.
Yeah, yeah. And I think there's also those, you win over the problem, right? So I'm thinking about like leaders that I coach or they just need to, I wish they would.
They just need to get on with it.
They just need to get on with it. And they need to come stop asking me everything. And I'm like, oh, red flag. Because then what might be driving that behaviour? What might be within your control that is driving that behaviour? And like you say, they are, and that's part of when we were having our debrief, they're the difficult conversations that sometimes it can be like as external coaches can be quite difficult, because we've kind of got to hold the mirror up to that person that's actually holding the budget and be like, actually, you're the problem. I'm just thinking about, what does the system mean? The system means the wider business. So if we're working with a team that's like a specific function within the team, there's a system of the wider business. There's different people they have to interact with, but there's the actual systems as well, like the hierarchy and all of that sort of stuff that goes on.
It's imagining the business as a machine.
Well, and the thing is, and I think that's important, because we can do all the work with one of the cogs, but then we also hear, well, that's out of our control. But actually understanding what is within a team's influence or not is helpful information as well.
I'm just going to translate that out of coach language for a second. When we talk about the system, we're not trying to be clever. We simply mean how your business really works. The hierarchy, the unwritten rules, who gets listened to, who everyone tiptoes around, and the behaviours people get away with just because they're delivering. You can have the best process map in the world, but if people are avoiding difficult conversations, second-guessing each other, or quietly working around certain personalities, it will always feel harder than it needs to. That's the space we're talking about here, not fixing humans, but helping teams see those patterns so they can start doing something different.
Let's take it back to that distinction. So we dive straight into people coming to us, asking for a workshop and us recognising there might be something more at play. Maybe if we talk more to those symptoms that get revealed during those initial conversations.
Because I think it's the coming back to that original thing of why is it so flipping hard to get the job done? Because when we were talking about it, like there's very few team coaching assignments we get, or even if it doesn't end up being team coaching, where it's not that people are not working hard or that they're not trying and they're still delivering, but to what cost? So often we're seeing teams that are quite burnt out or are having to work all the hours God sends, or just like feeling like they are having to go into battle every single day. Like we've used the term armor, which I think I used in the episode that I did with Melissa Haig, because it's a Brené Brownism, is that you armor up. But it's like, we can get it done. We do get it done. But why does it have to be so flipping hard along the way?
Yeah, it's those under the surface things that aren't being named, right? So when we're assuming that other members of the team are deliberately sabotaging our efforts, when we're hearing those things of something's happened, it's been a problem, but nobody follows up on it. It happened, like we've dealt with it, it's sorted, but we don't have a conversation about it. Like that, we just have to move on.
Do you know, the other thing that it is as well is those, and this is the one that really gets me, and you know where I get really riled up about it, it's those behaviours that people are allowed to get away with and nobody says anything about because they deliver results. So it doesn't matter that they're being a dickhead and not speaking in respectfully to people because they get, you know, they get the product out the door or they get the big deals or whatever the, you know, different functions they're in. But it's those things, it's the, and they're the things that become blockers to everybody else.
They're the unspoken rules.
Yeah, yeah. And that becomes part of the system, right? Like we work somewhere where it's okay to be disrespectful to one another. Or even if it's not overt as that, it's like it can go the other way. And this is another one that we've seen within teams that we've worked, is everybody's so flipping nice, because they're all like, you know, people really matter here. And like we're all one big happy family. And I always think red flag as soon as I get on a call and people are saying that, because then healthy conflict's not happening. There should be a little bit of conflict happening.
Absolutely. And it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because conflict is something we talk about a lot with teams. And that word conflict is really unhelpful. Like we use the word conflict for having a fallout over a mug not being washed in the sink, and the same word for war breaking out across the world. It's crazy. And I think, well, we had a pivotal moment with a team, didn't we, when we talked about that word. Actually, what about if we reframe it as your ability to embrace diversity, to embrace the different perspectives that are in the room, to sit with them, to talk about them, and not necessarily to reach agreements on them, but to accept that they're present and it's all valuable data.
Yeah. But also, I think in the businesses, particularly because we do a lot with businesses that are trying to drive change, do things differently, you ain't ever going to do that unless you have a little bit of conflict, because you're trying to push, I'm trying not to use as many corporate isms as I was going to say, push the envelope or something like that. That's another thing you've noticed in the food industry, is
push water uphill, fly it up the flagpole.
It's the whole, you're never going to change things without having to be a little bit radical in your thinking, and therefore there's going to be people, because as humans we like certainty, we like to do the same thing over and over again. And I know with NPD teams it can be really frustrating, because yes, clearly that's what a factory manager wants, that's what a finance manager wants, it's predictable, but it's what humans want really. We need predictability because it makes us feel safe, but it doesn't ever move you forward.
If nothing changes, nothing changes. And that's the crux of it. So if we're going to continue to be nice to each other's face and moan about each other behind their backs, nothing changes. That's still going to bubble as an undercurrent. It's still going to pull us back into unhealthy, toxic workplace situations. Yeah, we might be resistant to change as humans, but we need change for growth. And so it's an inevitable tension. And I think actually that's some of the power of team coaching, having somebody alongside as you walk through that messiness, as you try to do things in a different way to the way that you've done them before.
Yeah. And I do think there is also something about having somebody external that neutralizes the conversations. And one thing we've learned through the team coaching journeys we've been on over the last few years is you want to be able to instill those skills in each other or in the team so that they can go off and do that. You know, the purpose is not to become reliant on an external person, because then effectively you're just paying somebody to come and sort out everything. However, it can be very hard if you've been in an organization, you've been in a team for a long time and things have been left unsaid, to actually start those conversations. So actually having somebody to facilitate that is really helpful.
Yeah. As you were talking there, it made me think, because team coaching is relatively new as a modality. Even to train in or become accredited in team coaching, it's relatively new. And so a lot of those inquiries that come for training are because that's the only route people know is an option. Interestingly, when we have those conversations, there is an initial resistance to the cost, the depth, the size of the work. And again, it's that revealing why it's the path forward rather than the quick fix sticking plaster.
Yeah. And I think, like, as a parallel, thinking about one-to-one coaching, right, versus we can all read every self-help book, we can understand the different models, we can understand why our behavior is like it is. But unless you do the work to go under the surface with somebody that's trained to do that, then you don't ever actually make the changes that you want to make.
And we've had that feedback, right? We've had teams sit in the room and say, I know, but I didn't really know until we went through this. Like, I've listened to the podcast, I've read the books, I've done the journal activities,
yeah,
but actually now I really feel the difference that it's made.
Yeah. And I guess I'm just thinking about people listening now. It's the understanding what difference that really makes. So when you do a training course, you can go, right, we're going to cover this. We're going to do negotiation skills. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. We're going to do this. Whereas with team coaching, you actually don't necessarily know what's going to come up. So we go through a process, don't we? So we do like discovery and insight at the beginning, which is having confidential calls with everybody to like properly get under
surfacing all under the surf- of that data.
Yeah. And what's not being said, because a lot of the time we can, you know, that we're trained and we've got years of working with people where we can see the little, they're saying something, but they're holding something back because I can see it in their body language.
It's those curiosities, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. All of that stuff then starts to be able to say, right, okay, this is the direction we need to go in, and this is what you need to do to make a real difference in the team. But I think it's worth saying that there is still a place for training, because sometimes you don't know what you don't know. So if there's a skill set that is required, you still need training. But what we're talking about here is almost the stuff that is not about that. It's about the underlying behaviours that happen at work that stop things getting done.
All right, time to give a quick shout out to the people making this podcast happen. These are the brilliant sponsors backing bold, fearless conversations like this one. Let's hear from them. Ever chase a test result at 5:59 p.m. on a Friday? Yeah, we've been there too. That's why we're proud to be partnered with IFP Labs, a lab network that actually gets what it's like to work in food. They support businesses across Europe with accredited testing for food, feed, swabs, water and more. And they do it with a quick turnaround, expert insight and genuinely reliable service. IFP Labs is a laboratory network made up of companies who we know and trust because they're already supporting the people behind the products you love. Check them out at ifp-labs.com and breathe a little easier next time you've got a product launch riding on that test report. Want to build a high-performing team that doesn't shy away from the tough stuff? Our team coaching goes beyond away days. It creates the space for honest conversations, stronger collaboration, and shared accountability. Especially powerful for stretch teams who need to reset, refocus, and move forward together. Find out how it could work for your team at fearlessfoodies.co.uk. And we're back. Let's dive right in.
I think you hit the nail on the head when you said about that there isn't a clean plan. Like, often it's emergent, so we are working with whatever has come up in the month or 2 months or quarter between when we last saw you and worked together and how the reality has played out and where that means you are in the next moment that we're together. And that we've been in those sessions. Lunchtime going, no, what we thought we were going to be doing is not what we're going to be doing. We need to pivot. We need to lean into that came up in this morning's conversation. We need to spend some time on picking that a little bit more or finding a way forward and through that with the team. Yeah, I think the difference with team coaching is that depth and breadth of the walking alongside in the uncertainty, in the ambiguity. There isn't a clean plan, there isn't a clean answer, but there are strategies that run through that we will guide you along to do the work that needs doing, to surface those conversations that aren't happening, to name those behaviours that are unhelpful or that are enabling bad behaviours. That's a big difference with training, right? Because we're not always there to see the follow-up with a training journey.
Yeah. Yeah. This is much more about what goes on outside of the room when people aren't with us. It's like, actually, you know, what is actually going on and almost getting to the why things aren't changing if they're not changing for whatever reason. Because there usually is something, and we have those little aha moments, don't we, of like uncovering what is the thing that nobody is saying.
Yes, and they're the most beautiful moments when they happen. I think as well, there's something in the way that team coaching is structured, and we always look to flex and adapt to what the team need and be responsive as the journey progresses. But having that structure of set team sessions that are touch points where everybody's together, also having that support of individual one-to-one coaching for the individual to work on the way that they're showing up collectively in the team. It's having that pronged approach, perhaps working with the layer of first line reports underneath those leaders so that we get that extra data from the wider system. Maybe some interactions or some surveys or some data back from the wider team to bring that back to show, well, you're saying you do this and it's working, but actually here's what the people that are on the receiving end of that are feeling about that. How are you checking that in? How are you following that up? What are you doing with that information? What are the unintended consequences of the things you say or you don't say or the way that you say them? It's all of that that we're working with.
Yeah. And I think that the key message here is that it's not easy. There's often a lot to uncover. But if you really want transformative change in the way the team is working, and it's that one of the buzzwords around a lot at the minute is culture, isn't it? And if you really want to change the culture of a business, you've got to do this harder, deeper work. It's not, let's just do a one-off workshop and come up with our team values that nobody's actually going to work with. It's actually having somebody holding you accountable to those values and what are the behaviours that are attached to them and how are you actually demonstrating it. But it's not a one and done thing. You know, it has to be done over time, because if you want to make real changes in your business, then you have to invest the time and the effort and the money into doing that.
It's being willing to see the things you know are there, but don't feel ready to call out. Don't want to be the one to put your head above the parapet to say. It's bringing the team together collectively. And I'm really reminded, we've used this a few times in sessions, the change equation, talking about the fact that change only happens when that dissatisfaction with the current status quo, when that vision for the future is clear, when that first next step is there. And those three things have to be greater than the resistance to change. you have to be at that point of really feeling the discomfort in order to be willing to do the uncomfortable work it's going to take to get through that, to get to the other side of that.
Yeah. And sometimes, and I've definitely seen this in some teams, people just aren't ready, or they're like, I know this is what needs to happen, but I don't have the energy to do it. And it might be that they're in the wrong organisation.
We've been alongside teams in that moment. We've been there with them, Omar, helping people to make the right decisions for themselves. Like ultimately, and we talk about this all the time, don't we? Workplaces are made up of individual messy humans thrown together, expected to just get on with things harmoniously. That's the most ridiculous assumption known to man. We're messy. We need some help to navigate this stuff. It doesn't come easy. It doesn't come naturally. We're not mind readers. We don't have crystal balls.
No. Well, and I think this is the thing, is you can put in all of the procedures that you want, because you see that happens, doesn't it? Oh, well, this has gone wrong that time, so we're going to put this procedure in and we're going to do it this way, and 600 people need to sign it off before it happens so that this never happens again. Or, you know, that's what happens in organizations, but actually that's just papering over the fact that we just need to be able to have a proper conversation about it and not get our knickers in a twist.
It's that focus, isn't it? So it's much easier for businesses to talk in terms of tangible tasks. Oh, the money's down, the productivity's off, the pathway failed. Actually, those things are only ever symptoms. The cause underneath sits with your people. It sits with the way your people are interacting with each other. That's the crux of what we're working with. How are those relationships being formed, maintained? How are they navigating bumps in the road along the way? How well do they repair their ruptures? Because it's that that makes a difference to turnover, sickness rates, failed launches, missed product deadlines. It all comes down to how your people are operating.
Yeah, and productivity. I think it's one of those things where actually when you say, if you are, I had, try to remember who, Helena, who was at Cranswick, who is a production, I don't know what her title is, but operations. So like working in the, you know, leading the teams in the factory. And there's so much that, because a lot of the industry is very, it's still like people putting things in pots on the line, that there was a lot of focus there in terms of getting people on board, and there's a lot of work and understanding on how we've got to, because you can physically see that team, like we've got to work better together because we've got to communicate down this line, and it's, you know, like it's operationally streamlined and you can sort of see that. Whereas then when you get upstairs in the office, not everybody sits next to each other and they've got different agendas and they're pulling in different directions, it's not quite as obvious. But the things are the same. The thing is the same, which is we need to communicate better. We need to know when there's a problem. We need to call it out. We need to make sure that everybody's safe. All of that stuff is everywhere. It's just not as visible. So it's like, how do you translate that outside of a factory environment?
And I think that's part of what takes the time, right? Because all of those things that go under the surface have gone so far under the surface. We've got to raise that visibility. Awareness is choice. And until people can see for themselves the impact it's having, they won't do anything to change it. So yeah, I think, so we've talked about training and coaching, each has its place. When it comes to those deep-rooted behavioural patterns, I think it's the time and the depth that coaching gives that is stronger for dealing with that than a series of training workshops.
Yeah. And therefore the result can be stronger at the end as well.
Much more sustained because it's been embedded over time.
All right, let's bring this back to you and your team. If you're listening and thinking, okay, I recognise all of this, but how do I actually figure out what's going on in my own team? This next bit's for you. Me and Donna are going to share a few simple questions you can ask that will help you see whether the problem is really skills and process, or whether it's the stuff under the surface that no one's talking about.
I think one of the bravest ways to tackle this, I think, is to ask the question in the first instance. Something as simple as, on a scale of 1 to 10, how easy is it to work here and why? doing that and allowing people different ways to feedback their responses, but demonstrating that you're really open to hearing them, that you want that honest feedback, listening, taking it on board, not paper over it, not defending it.
Yeah, because ultimately people want to feel heard. I mean, that's the human, you know.
We need to matter.
Yes.
The Art of Mattering. That's a great book. There's another recommendation for any of your readers.
The Art of Mattering. We'll put it in the show notes. But yeah, so there's something about making it safe enough for people to say how they're feeling, but also inviting it, because I don't think it's as easy as saying, well, they know my door's always open. It's actually, I need feedback from you on what is easy to get done here and what is difficult to get done here. You know, like, there's different ways of doing it. And I think it's important to say, like we always do, that everybody's different. So don't feel like there's only one way to do that, which is ask everybody in a team meeting. Because if you've got a load of introverts that need time to reflect, that ain't going to go down well. So it can be anonymous surveys, pulse surveys. It can be, I think, in a workshop situation, we often use post-it notes like me. So people don't actually have to say it out loud, but they've stuck it on the wall and then it can be read out, you know. So making it feel safe to give that feedback.
Give people options.
Yeah.
Give people options. But you do need to make the invitation. Just saying my door is always open is not effective. As a leader, you are a gardener. Your job is to cultivate the conditions in which your seedlings can grow and thrive and bloom.
Yeah. So the asking for feedback, and I think it's the what's easy to get stuff done, but it's also what's making life hard for you at the moment? Like, I really want to hear, and that might be in a one-to-one situation or it might be in a team situation, but what are we doing that unintentionally makes our life harder? And I think, actually, again, linking back to an episode I did with Beth and Grills, we were talking about, I can't remember what the title of the episode, but I'll find it, basically about getting feedback from all levels. So actually, rather than just having conversations at a leadership level about what's difficult, ask the person that is, you know, the one that's having to do the job every single day, that says, well, actually, if we just move this from here to here, then that would be a lot easier for me.
We've done that with teams, right? We've actually encouraged them, go find 6 stakeholders, at least one above, at least one on the same level, and at least 2 who report into you, as well as somebody that doesn't interact with you daily, and ask them for feedback. Ask them these 3 questions and then sit and reflect on that feedback. How would they describe your ways of working? What makes life easier working with you? Where does it make life harder?
And then I think there's something about this conflict thing, isn't there, as well? And actually, like you say, the word conflict is too strong a word. It's all we're asking for is people's opinions. So actually, again, inviting different opinions, particularly, I think, I'm thinking in some of the training that we do, where when we do the mock meetings and, you know, like the people that take, well, I can't remember what we call it, arrogant Adrian or something, that takes over the meeting, actually inviting other perspectives. If there's one perspective that is particularly loud all of the time, like, great to hear your perspective. What other perspectives are there in the room? Because that actually, again, you are inviting people to not agree.
Healthy. It's healthy. My other one on the conflict side of things I'd throw in, when you join a new team, or if you've been in the team for ages but never asked this question, go and ask your teammates, how do you prefer to receive feedback? Like, because that's the thing that doesn't happen. Those are those missed moments, aren't they? Where somebody's niggled, somebody's narked. It just never got talked about. So make that an explicit question. If there's any feedback, how do you want me to do that? Do you prefer it in the moment? Do you want it in writing? Do you want some time to think about it? Like, that alone would start to solve so many problems.
And this is the thing, isn't it? I think what we're talking about is having more open conversations, not about what we're doing, but how we do it and how we behave around each other. And I think as an industry that is very fast moving, and it's all about getting products out the door and selling them, we sometimes forget that it isn't, that we're not, like you said, but we talked about ourselves as cogs and machines. We're humans, and the doing has to be done by humans. So therefore, we need to be able to have the human skills to make that happen.
And they don't have to be time or labour intensive. A simple question, a simple 5-minute conversation around how do you prefer to receive feedback is going to set up every other conversation after that for success. If you don't have that 5-minute conversation in the first instance, I guarantee you, you'll have at least 5-hour-long conversations along the way when somebody does it in a way you don't appreciate.
Yeah. I think it's the right time to say one of the things that we've learned through 2-3 years of doing team coaching with various teams is that we are a team within ourselves, and we've had to learn these behaviours ourselves. So there have been times where it has been really awkward, where we've needed to say something. Usually Donna's better at it than me, I would say, but I'm getting braver. You know, that's part of, you know, the fearless foodie's way. But this is why she's the wingwoman of fearlessness, to call it out and say, I'm feeling something a bit weird here. Or I remember the first time we did a session together and I like turned into this flipping wallflower. And then we like analysed what was going on. But we could have just been like, I'm not going to say anything about that, or I'm never going to work with her again. But actually, we talked through, we worked through the problems as they arrive, even though sometimes we're like, oh, I don't really want to say it. But, you know, I actually don't feel that anymore. After all, like, I've got to get it off my chest because I'm going to feel better. And it's that when, if you're listening and thinking about, you know, all the stuff that gets unsaid or isn't said in a team, you've got to be the change that you want to see in the team. You cannot expect your team to be more open and honest and all of those things if you are not doing that yourself.
No. And the thing about a team is different to a group because it comes together to fulfill a common purpose. If we hadn't had that conversation after that first session when that happened and we'd let it fester, I don't think anything bad would have happened, but we'd have drifted. The strength of our delivery together wouldn't have been there. And eventually that would have just ruptured into not happening anymore. It felt too important to us in our work together to make the choice to ignore that. And I think that's the first brave choice.
Yes.
That teams need to make.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So work feels like a constant uphill battle right now. I want you to hear this clearly. It's probably not because your team don't care or aren't capable. More often, it's the stuff that sits under the surface, the behaviours no one's naming, those unspoken rules about who we challenge and who we don't, and the conversations that never quite happen because everyone's just too busy getting the job done. One-off training day absolutely has its place, especially where there are real skills gaps. But if you want to change how it feels to work in your team, to make it easier, safer, and frankly, less exhausting to get things done, you have to be willing to look at those patterns and start talking about them. If today's episode has hit a nerve, your next step is simple. Grab the free resource that I've put in the show notes. It will help you start identifying where things feel sticky and where the real friction might be. And if what surfaces feels a bit big to untangle on your own, you know where we are.
And if what you want to do is maybe reach out, have a chat, see what we do, see if it could be helpful, drop us a message. We are always happy to have those conversations.
Absolutely. So thank you, Donna. I think we're going to have Donna back for more of these conversations, Pete, don't you?
Loved it, Amy. You know I love working with you.
Yeah, likewise. And I will see everybody next time. But in the meantime, be bold, be brave and be fearless.
That's a wrap on this episode of The Fearless Foodie. If it hit home, subscribe, leave a review and share it with someone who's ready for less fluff and more real talk. And if you're ready to build a bolder, braver, more brilliant team, come find me at fearlessfoodies.co.uk. Until next time, be bold, be brave, be fearless.